item 11, from Corporation Counsel submitting an informational monthly report providing an update on the status of pending litigation. This item is also considered by the Committee on Finance, Personnel, and Audit and is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Thank you. Attorney Grady and Attorney Bergen.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a lot to tell you. Obviously, I answer any questions you have. With respect to the actual written report, there are only two things that have been added. One you already, both you probably already know about. One is that we informed you the Wisconsin Supreme Court has agreed to accept the review of the case involving the reduction in the pension multiplier, the Stoker case, which is under number four on the outline on the list. The briefing has been started. They are going to schedule this case for oral argument together with the case above it, the Medicare Part B premium case, the FNIP and the Attorneys Association case. So they're going to be argued together, I believe, in November. And then thereafter, decisions could come, my guess is not until 6 months after that. So my guess is we won't have a decision in these cases until spring of 15. But we will get decisions on both of them from the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And so we hopefully will have some good guidance one way or the other. And obviously, hopefully, we'll win. But regardless, that's where they stand. The only other new thing that I added at the end of this is just the John Doe case, which you've read about in the newspaper. As you know, the John Doe judge has ordered the release of a large number of documents to Milwaukee County. We do not, the order was just signed a couple days ago. We are just starting to work now with the district attorney's office on how, you know, the mechanics of doing that. They have a wide variety of types of documents and things in their possession. They have things like actual hard drives of computers. They have emails that are from county email system. They have emails from private systems like Google and Yahoo, et cetera. And they're in all different kinds of technical formats. Some of which we may not even have the resources or the ability to access at this point. We may have to get outside assistance with that. We're working with IMSD to talk about that. So we're sort of now starting into the process of, you know, just physically how do we do this? Because what we have to do are a couple of things. One is we have to review, I think, literally every single thing that we receive to determine whether it's a public record or not. I think a large portion of these things will be public records, but sprinkled within them are purely personal communications about personal health conditions, dogs and cats, et cetera, that really are not public records. And so we have to take those out. We have to look for any attorney-client communications, of which we know there are some in there, and preserve that privilege for those items. We would have to redact any reference to, you know, things like Social Security numbers. And so we have to do that kind of process, and that's going to be time-consuming. We will, once we do that, either in groups or in batches as we go through them, we'll be releasing them. We haven't figured out exactly how that's going to be done. As an example, we have a request already from the Journal Sentinel to basically say, give us every public record that you receive. Now, technically, that's an overly broad public records request. That's not a proper public records request. Nevertheless, the administration, the county executive, is considering whether that might not be the best way to go here, and in fact, just make that kind of a complete release. It's a weighing of that process versus a weighing of dealing with dozens, if not hundreds, of individual requests that are specific and having to go through and search for the specific records each time somebody makes a specific request, as opposed to just putting them all out there. And so we're kind of working through the mechanics, basically, at this point. We don't actually have the documents, but we are going to go before.
In terms of, I'm sorry, Supervisor Weishaw.
Thank you. What is the difference in this case compared to the other documents that were released in the Rheinfleisch case? Why do we feel any need to go through and if there's a document in there about her cat or, you know, someone's cat, why do we feel that we need to spend the resources to not make that public?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, what happened with the Rheinfleisch case, and then I will answer your question, but I just want to get the facts out of what happened. Those documents were included as part of a criminal prosecution file. It went up to the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals said, we think these documents should be made part of the appellate file, the appellate record for us to review. They then went to Ms. Reinflesch through her counsel and said, would you like to go through these emails and redact or designate the ones you think are personal? And so they gave her the opportunity to do that. She chose not to. She waived that opportunity and said, no, I'm not going to take the time and effort to do it. They can all be out there. In this situation, we don't have waivers from anybody of their right to keep personal information personal. And so I think we run the risk of claims of invasion of privacy or things like that if we release things that are not, don't meet the definition of public records under the statute. We're also thinking about the possibility of, can we solve that by a notice, much like the Court of Appeals did? Could we solve it by a notice and say to individual X, we'd like to release everything. Is that okay with you? I wouldn't. That's not exactly how it would work, but that idea. But I'm fairly confident that we would get responses from people saying no, and so I'm anticipating there's not much point in going that route. Well, I've already gotten indications informally from some of the subject's attorneys saying they would object to that.
Well, the thing with this, though, is that, one, if you give a notice and time specific and they say okay, then they can, and they say, okay, we don't want this stuff released, then they can pay for it to be, you know, redacted if that's what you want, for them to go through it. I don't understand why the county taxpayer has to pay to go and take out stuff. And I think that these people who wanted to engage in, you know, this criminal activity, you lose your right to privacy on that. You know what? If they weren't, you know, breaking the law on this stuff, their, you know, issue about their cat or dog wouldn't be in this bucket of files. So, you know, that I don't understand why the taxpayers should be on the hook to the tune of, you know, thousands of dollars to have somebody go through on this, that they got themselves involved in this situation. If they don't want this stuff to make public, be made public, they can send whatever their representative down to look through the stuff and take out at their expense and by a date certain. And if they don't complete their stuff by then, we're putting it all out on the street.
The problem, Chairman and Supervisors, with that is that there's very clear authority from, I believe, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, if not them, the Court of Appeals, that it is the custodian of the records' responsibility to do any redaction required, and that the custodian of the records who does redaction cannot charge the requester for that cost. There is, and that's a very recent case, and there's no way around that.
Right, but you're claiming that these records that you're going to eliminate are not public records. I can understand the public records side of that. Yes, we're responsible for the legitimate public records, but if somebody said to their wife, hey, get a gallon of milk on the way home, that's not a public record. And if you don't want that to be made public, and you don't want that to be put out on the street, you should come at your own expense during a certain time frame to come and get your stuff, rather than, you know, it's not a public record on stuff. Now, if there's, like you said, things of attorney-client privilege or other things that are not appropriate but are public records to be put out there, yes, we should bear the expense and the burden and the responsibility of taking care of those records. But, you know, I almost see this as sort of like, you know, a landlord-tenant thing. You only have so much time to get your stuff, and if you don't do it, it's all going out on the curb, whether you like it or not.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, maybe another way to look at it is that the district attorney conducted a sweep. They swept in public records. They also swept in private email accounts. They swept in, you know, Supervisor Wyshon's private Gmail account or something that had no connection to the county. Now, some of the materials on there, on these individuals' private Gmail accounts, may very well be public records, but they're not materials that we would normally have access to as public records from the county. They're giving us all of that.
Can you explain the distinction, though? So then why are those being turned over if they're deemed to not be public records?
Because the judge told them.
We're taking jurisdiction because they were judged public records.
No, they haven't been. Okay. Remember that the John Doe proceeding is essentially a criminal investigation. So in the course of that criminal investigation, the DA investigators collected a lot of information. One example, I guess you could say, is that, you know, most of us in the county government right now have two cell phones, one for personal business, one for private business or public business. The DA essentially sees both of those from some people. The judge has now said, okay, county, now here's everything. Look through it and decide what's a public record. So that's one task that we have to do. We have to sort through and determine what's really private, what's done on the private system that's really public business, and then what's done on the public system. Now, I think as we go through this, the material taken from the public systems is our sort of assumption is that that's going to be public business, you know, even if it is a message about getting a quarter million.
Does the prior refusal of the defendant in this case to go through that have any bearing on this particular circumstance? I mean, wasn't that an opportunity that he or she had then and chose not to exercise in? Because of that, everything's flowed from that point?
No, I mean, that's one individual supervisor, but there are 12 or 15, I think, individuals whose materials we expect to be getting.
Yeah, we have more, and not everyone was offered the opportunity to do
no,
that.
No, right, and not all the people whose materials we're getting have been accused or charged, let alone convicted. So we are getting from the DA materials that we normally would not have access to through public records searches. That's one of the issues.
He sort of passed the buck.
Yes. Yes. One
well,
might
well
say
then on that point, the plan here to deal with this stuff in a reasonable, you know, amount of time on stuff? Because yes, this is political, whether we like it or not, and honestly, I think it is wrong to wait until after an election to then find out that you know you're going to dump a lot of, you know, records on the street, say in January, and then everybody says, oh, I would have never voted for that guy if I had known this stuff, kind of stuff, and then it's too late.
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, no. So I think we need if once the records are in our custody, that there has to be a plan that in a relatively short time frame that these things are dealt with and not so we constantly get this excuse while we're still going through the filing box.
No, there won't be. The plan right now is to see what we get, first of all, from the DA. You know, you've heard perhaps through the press that there are 2 terabytes of information, which is 150 million pages. Although then we're advised that some of that may include programs and operating systems and you know, internal computer things that we really don't care about. So the first step is to go through and sort out what's real information, communications, you know, real emails. And then to further sort that as opposed to what's maybe even junk mail and set that aside. And then go through what are actual communications and try to quickly get to those things and then start, as Mr. Grady said, start reading through those and the attachments. And as soon as we get batches of those that can be released, we'll start to release those, I think, or put them up for public access. A related point is that it may be possible for the county to charge some of that as search fees to people who come and get access, but how do you split a search fee if a number of people are accessing a public website? So those are some questions that we still have to address. But I think this is a matter of weeks, certainly not. I mean, I'm certainly aware that the election is coming and that this is attracting broad interest. So.
Well, that might, I don't think that we should be charging exorbitant fees for this stuff, because I had my own experience with Scott Walker and him sending me that it was going to cost $2,800 to get some public information. It's no longer, you know, public access if you're going to start charging astronomical fees. I could see, you know, small, you know, $25 for a DVD or whatever, something like that. But to think we're going to turn around and charge any, whether it's an individual or an organization, thousands of dollars to help kind of defray the cost, I think that is you know, way off base, especially when we have, there's the technology out there now when you can put this whole thing out there on the cloud and just let whoever wants to, you know, go through it at a little or no cost of stuff.
I would say that's certainly something we're aware of and considering and trying to make it accessible in some reasonable fashion to people who are interested.
So I'm sorry, just to sort of wrap up, the timeline, IMSD is going to take the first crack at this to see what they've got, and then they'll hire a vendor and...
Or may or may not be IMSD, maybe a vendor, but...
But we have somebody on deck ready to do that work?
The DA used a vendor. I suspect we'll probably use the same vendor to help us. Their searches were a little different, but it would make sense to use the same vendor. It's a vendor here in the area to at least do some of the initial sorting and probably translation of some of this material. Apparently in a very raw type format, and it has to be put into something that people can read. And then we'll start sorting. We'll probably use an outside vendor with some contract attorneys to do some initial sorting, too, so that we can do it quickly and efficiently and impartially. So.
But there are no fund transfers or anything that need to happen before that work would at least begin.
We could begin it without fund transfers, and if we do need some money, I'll be in to let you know.
Okay. Mark will. Didn't want to... Learn about that later.
We will not.
There may be some later, but
right. No, but I didn't want to hear next month that we haven't started because we don't have the money to pay the, you know, the person to bring them on. So
I actually talked with the comptroller about some ways to get started without coming back.
So. Very good.
Part of the difficulty is that we know the categories, the types of things, but we haven't seen any of them.
Right.
And so we know that they've got lots of emails in various forms. Some of them are in Lotus Notes, County's forms. Some of them are in a different format that they, when they get them from, you know, Gmail or whoever.
Right.
And then they have to be converted to another format so that you can actually look at them and search them, et cetera. Then there's the hard drives that have things in a format that we don't have access to. That's what the DAs use this outside vendor for. I'm not a technology person, so I'm way out of my head. But we just haven't seen this. Until we see it and have a chance to look at it, or with IMSD or whoever to look at it, we don't have a good idea. We just know there's a lot, and it's all different kinds of forms, technological forms, and so.
Okay. Supervisor Weisson.
Is there a deadline? I mean, there's got to be something, you know, at least a monthly or even before, you know, because like I said, I don't want you to wait in 7 years like with the IRS, right? You know,
we do have a request from the Journal Sentinel, who made the, you know, filed the intervention motion. They have said they are willing to work with us as much as possible. They'll assist us as much within limits as much as possible. We also have previously received lots of requests from across the country from people, and so the direct answer to your question is the public records law says as soon as reasonably practical. Now, that's not going to be 10 days, but, you know, we agree that it needs to be done as fast as we can. It's just really I'd like to get this out of my hair and be done with it. So this is whatever hair is left. So, you know, I'd just like to be done. So the sooner we can get it done, the better, but it's clearly going to require some resources. So.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, can we discuss item 14?
Oh, I'm sorry. Absolutely. What was your question? Do you have a specific question or ask for
Well, the if they could, you know, speak to it, give us an update, what the situation is, what our plan is.
Item 14 is the lawsuit that was filed over related to the laid-off housekeepers, allegation that they were laid off because of their union activities and were not recalled because of their union activities. It's fairly early in the context of a lawsuit, fairly early in the lawsuit. We did ask the mutual to assign it to outside counsel, and so outside counsel is defending it. I haven't talked to them recently. I think all that's happened is we filed our answer, and I think it's just very early yet.
Well, right. My question is, when do you guys actually sit down and discuss how to resolve this whole situation here. Because I think we've heard, you know, hours of testimony and stuff, and you know, in front of this committee and other things, that I think a lot of us don't feel that this was quite on the up and up. And I would prefer not to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in court and take, you know, a year to figure all this stuff out. And so I would hope that we could sit down and kind of figure out a way to resolve this this issue.
That sounds like a closed session discussion to me. Maybe not for today, but for another meeting. You know, our job is to try and defend mm-hmm. the county against allegations, and so our intention is, until we feel like we can't, there's evidence to show that we can't successfully defend it, or that there's a risk of us not being able to successfully defend it, then we'll talk about settlement. I think this lawsuit is different than the kind of things you heard about in some ways. I don't recall before this lawsuit ever hearing anybody allege that the reason this particular group of employees was laid off and the reason the county went along with that privatization was because they were in a union. I don't remember that from the debate at the time at the board or anywhere else. And so that's a new allegation. Now, there was a lot of discussion recently about why weren't these people called back, and allegations of blackballing and things like that. But I also heard Department of Human Resources through Rick Session appear in front of the Finance Committee and say none of that occurred. We have legitimate basis for how this was handled, and it was handled appropriately. So at this point, that's what I, as the attorney, have to go on, is that HR feels that the recall process was handled appropriately, and I've never heard any I don't have any basis to believe that the reason for the original layoff was union-related, but we can certainly have that kind of discussion. And,
right. No, my question is, don't we do a, you know, cost-benefit analysis here? Like, okay, it's going to take us so much time and, you know, so much resources that it would be in our best interest to engage in some kind of, like I said, talks with the other side to come to some resolution on this thing that is a win-win for everybody, that, you know, because otherwise, sure, we may win, but if it costs us $500,000 and all your time and efforts, I don't really consider that a win. And we would have been better off taking some other direction earlier on. So that's what I'm looking at, is there a time frame, or do you just, in the natural course of things, when do you sit down with the other side and say, hey, okay, how do we fix this?
We're defending against this complaint on certain legal grounds to start with, and I think after those defenses are lodged, if the case is moving forward, we would have those potential discussions. But we can perhaps kind of having an office conference with Mark here on the fly. But we can perhaps discuss it with the mutual, and then maybe have a report.
It seems there's an assumed nexus here that. Because you're in the union, you're making more money, and because you're making more money, that's why you were replaced. And those assumptions along the way are, I think, the basis for making the argument, I'm a member of the union, therefore I was not rehired.
And I understand that, but that's broader than what the actual legal basis is. Because the idea, as I understand it, and again, I'm not handling this case, but as I understand it, is that their layoffs occurred not just because they're in a union and therefore there's an assumption they make more money, et cetera. It's you were laid off because of union activities, because you engaged in protected activities as a union person, as a union
member.
Well,
isn't just being a member of a union activity? But I'll stop.
The thing is, looking at where we are today, and to think that we have the most anti-union governor in the state's history doing all this kind of stuff, who was then county executive and all this kind of stuff, I don't think it would be hard to make a case that, you know, there's something related to union activity. And like I said, when you do just the simple cost-benefit analysis of how long it would take to whatever prove our point, it may be better off that we come to some, you know, agreement to resolve this. And that's all I'm looking for, is what is our time? Are we waiting for something from them that they have to, you know, reach out to the county, or is it to the county that says something to them?
All right. I'm going to suggest we take it up in a closed session in the future. Perhaps you could have our outside counsel available to answer those questions. In the meantime, the initial complaint and our response is public.
Sure.
Okay, if you could circulate that, I think, unless other members have already seen it, I haven't seen it.
We can circulate what's been found.
I would just warn you, you don't get much from those, but I'll certainly just share them with you. They aren't like a brief where you lay out theories. It's just, we deny this allegation. We deny that allegation. But we can certainly circulate it.
All right.
And when it turns out the privatization actually costs money and we didn't save a thing, it's going to be really interesting.
All right. With that, any other...
Mr. Chairman, one more quick thing. The last week or so, I've been... our office and me personally, we've been active in defending our county clerk, Mr. Zarneski, in the same-sex marriage issues. And I'm going to Madison tomorrow to see what Judge Crabb has to say. But for the last week, licenses have been issued, and we'll see what she says tomorrow.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.